John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, September 6th, 2012. Increasing pressure on the PA, the harsh economic conditions in Palestine, and more deadly attacks in Gaza. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. A fishing boat illegally carrying at least 100 refugees capsized off the coast of western Turkey today, killing 58 people. Officials report that many of the deceased were trapped under the deck of the boat, including women and children, and were unable to escape. 49 others, including Palestinians, Syrians, and Iraqis, were rescued by the Turkish authorities. At present, the nationalities of those deceased are unclear. Wednesday evening, three Palestinians were killed and a fourth seriously wounded when the army bombarded a car transporting resistance fighters in the Al-Maghazi refugee camp in central Gaza. Palestinian medical sources in the Gaza Strip reported that three more Palestinians were killed on Thursday morning when the Israeli army bombarded Beit Hanun in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. A Palestinian refugee in Al-Yarmouk refugee camp was killed on Wednesday evening after the camp was bombarded by Israeli military. The refugee, Ala Farouk, was killed by shells that targeted Al-Malaki Street. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas arrived in Cairo on Wednesday evening to meet with the Arab Follow-Up Committee. The talks focused on the situation in the occupied territories and the efforts to achieve national Palestinian unity. Israel and the United States are pressuring the Palestinians to resume peace talks by imposing harsh restrictions that are choking the already devastated economic situation of the Palestinian Authority. The PA will not resume peace talks as long as Israel continues its invasions, assaults, violations, and for as long as it continues to construct and expand illegal settlements. Protests and strikes are spreading throughout the West Bank following skyrocketing costs of food and fuel. That's all for Palestine Today. This was the Thursday, September 6th roundup of news from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org Today's report has been brought to you by Hossam Kassis and me, Catherine Anderson.
Afghanistan, 5th of September. NATO is reporting the deaths of two soldiers of unreported nationality from a helicopter crash in an undisclosed location in eastern Afghanistan. Camp Pendleton, California, 5th of September. Four U.S. Marines have been arrested for gay bashing. They are being investigated for a hate crime after they entered the Silver Fox gay bar just before closing and jumped a young man. Libya, ongoing. Reports are emerging that the CIA's claim to have waterboarded only three detainees is yet another lie from the former Bush regime. The nonprofit group Human Rights Watch is reporting that at least five members of the Libyan Islamic Fighters group were rendered to Gaddafi's regime in 2003, and at least one was waterboarded. Mohammad Sharia was reportedly detained in Pakistan in April 2003 and held in American custody in Afghanistan before being transferred to Libya. He told Human Rights Watch that at one point in Afghanistan, his American captors had put a hood over his head and strapped him to a wooden board, then poured water over his face until he felt as if he was asphyxiating. An American man who appeared to be a doctor was present during the sessions, he said. While he did not use the term waterboarding, the description matches the technique. Quote, "They start to pour water to the point where you feel like you are suffocating," Mr. Sharia said. He was asked questions between sessions, he added, and quote, "It wouldn't stop until they got some kind of answer from me." Mr. Barack Obama, you can't untorture those that Bush tortured, but you can sure as hell stop adding to the evil that Bush has done. Bring all the troops home today.
Strength in their hearts and fear in their eyes. Old soldiers never die, they only fade away. But the young ones do not die, nor they are cut down instead. And someone pulled the trigger, gave the order, held the song. And someone wrote the advert in the paper that they read. I will be done. But you won't get your hands on my son. You can wait till kingdom come.
As WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange remains a virtual prisoner inside Ecuador's embassy in London after winning political asylum status, his group's disclosure of tens of thousands of secret U.S. State Department cables reverberates across Latin America. Leaked cables published in 2011 revealed the heavy hand of the Obama administration in the violent campaign against drug traffickers and American unhappiness with Brazil's attempts to broker a diplomatic solution to the West's confrontation with Iran over its nuclear program. Cablegate, as the leaked communications were known, led to the resignation of the U.S. ambassador to Mexico, Carlos Pascual, after a cable revealed a biting critique of Mexican generals for risk avoidance. According to The Nation magazine, the disclosure embarrassed the Mexican generals and caused a rift in U.S.-Mexican relations. The WikiLeaks cables also exposed attempts by the George W. Bush White House to enlist other nations in the region to spy on Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez. Many observers say the secret cables are only the tip of the iceberg of U.S. intervention in Latin America. In Brazil, perhaps the most important and lasting effects of the WikiLeaks disclosures may be the establishment of new independent media outlets willing to expose official secrets. a new nonprofit center for investigative journalism based on the U.S. group ProPublica, was formed to promote the sharing of groundbreaking investigative stories. Now, Brazil's big TV networks like Globo are eager to sponsor the annual gathering of the Brazilian Association of Investigative Journalism.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. After months of trying to court the Occupy movement to be their Tea Party, the Democrats turned around and held their Democratic National Convention for 2012 in the banking city of Charlotte, North Carolina, often referred to as Wall Street South. On the 5th of September, Obama canceled an idiotic plan to take the nomination and give his nomination speech at Bank of America Stadium. After having courted votes from Occupy activists, he was going to turn around and give his nomination speech at Bank of America Stadium, but he canceled, claiming there was a threat of rain, never mind that the forecast said there was only a minimal chance of rain. The GOP claimed it was because he couldn't fill the stadium, but Occupy activists think there's another reason for it. Here's a report from a D.C.-based activist participating in the protests outside the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte. And what do you think of Obama deciding to cancel taking his acceptance speech at Bank of America Stadium? Obama's been trying to get votes from Occupy people. They had a failed attempt to turn Occupy into a Democratic Tea Party. Then he turned around and was going to take his acceptance speech at a stadium named for Bank of America.
Yeah, that is funny. What I think that he's afraid of people asking him questions from the streets, you know, all the protesters asking questions and disturbing the event because people are upset and they don't believe in him anymore. And the ones that we never believe in Obama also going to be there protesting against him. And I believe that that's why he changed places, so... That's what I think. I think it's funny. I think it's actually a good situation that the system understands that we can change things, you know, that they should be afraid of the consequences of their actions against our communities. So, yeah, I think we are sending the message.
On the 5th of September, the protests in Charlotte against the Democratic National Convention continued.
We have this march that was Money Out of Politics. It went pretty well. Then we had this other march, what the Money Into Politics turned into against all political prisoners. And also somehow ended up being anti-coal. So we went to Duke's building.
Here's what things sounded like as those protesters marched on Duke Energy and Bank of America.
They told us!
They told us!
This convention! Would not accept special interest funds!
Would not accept special interest funds!
But we now know this is a lie!
But we now know this is a lie!
We're out here drawing attention to Duke Energy, Bank of America, and a number of corporations that call Charlotte home. These are corporations that have an undue amount of influence on our political system. Corporations that influence both political parties, both the Republicans and the Democrats. Whereas in Tampa, the Republicans blatantly accepted corporate funds. In Charlotte, they are claiming they are not accepting corporate funds, when in reality, they have set up a fund. The host committee itself has set up a fund called New American City to accept an unlimited amount of campaign funds. Corporate contributions.
Focusing on Duke Energy and how Duke Energy is a polluting company that gets a lot of money to politics. But in general, it's about all the corporations that are buying our political system and ruining it and taking away the whole idea of one person.
Later that night, activists went back out for the second night in a row of protests against the two-party system.
After that at night, we have the anti-two-party system protest. We actually did go to downtown, and we were in front of Bank of America.
For the second night in a row?
Yeah, yes, but it was an anti two parties match. That was the purpose, you know, against the DNC and against the RNC.
On Tuesday, the 4th of September, 10 undocumented immigrants from the UndocuBus in Charlotte, North Carolina, protesting the Democratic National Convention, got off the bus and staged a civil disobedience protest, sitting down, blocking the streets, and were arrested. The Obama administration has deported more immigrants than even George W. Bush, yet Obama is hoping for Latino votes. That's why undocumented immigrants are protesting against the Democratic National Convention. Here's what some of the folks on the UndocuBus had to say about the Democratic National Convention and the protest.
No fears! Immigrants are walking here, no papers, no fears! Immigrants are walking here!
My name is Tanya Sueta, I'm with the No Papers, No Fear, Right for Justice. And we're marching because we're here marching against fear, against politicians telling people that they shouldn't be out in the streets, fighting for their rights. I'm undocumented myself, and I'm here with a bus full of about 40 undocumented people coming from around the country. We've been traveling through the South, talking to other communities, telling them that it's okay to stand up for their rights, to tell their stories, and to fight against anti-immigration laws. We think that President Obama should listen to the immigrant communities. We need him to take courageous steps, just like the people on this bus have. We need to stop deportations. He's been the president who's deported the most people in history, and we're here to ask him what side of history he's going to be on.
Mi nombre es María Cruz Ramírez, y estoy aquí en esta marcha principalmente.
My name is María Cruz Ramírez, and I'm here in this march first of all because I want the dignity and respect of my children. My children have suffered a lot. They've had to protest against these laws. They've been arrested, two of them, one minor and one adult.
Mayor de edad, y nada, tengo que apoyarlos.
I have to support them. I have to continue their struggle. They began this struggle, and I, as a mother, I tell all the mothers, unite with your children, because the dreams of your children are my dreams too. It's been my best gift to struggle and to say to the people that we can do it, without papers and without fear. Here I am.
Thankfully, as of the 6th of September, it appears that the government has agreed not to attempt to deport any of the 10 undocumented immigrant activists who were arrested on the 4th of September in the civil disobedience protests surrounding the Democratic National Convention and Obama's failure to deliver on immigration issues and continued high rate of deportations.
The pipeline giant TransCanada has offered to alter its Keystone XL oil pipeline to avoid environmentally sensitive areas on the route between the Alberta tar sands and Texas. President Obama had rejected initial plans for the Keystone XL pipeline earlier this year, but later pledged to fast-track approval of the southern portion stretching from Oklahoma to the Gulf Coast. TransCanada says its new proposed route takes into account public concerns and feedback from environmental officials in Nebraska. Opponents say the Keystone Pipeline will poison local communities and further harm the environment through the increased greenhouse gases of extracting tar sands oil. On Wednesday, activists with the tar sands blockade in Texas held their third action against the pipeline's construction by locking themselves to TransCanada equipment near Sulphur Springs.
On the 31st of August, the last day of the Republican National Convention, Earth First blockaded all roads to TECO's Big Bend coal-burning power plant in Tampa, Florida. They listed both the environmental price of burning fossil fuels and corporate influence in politics as the reason for the blockade. TECO Energy, based in Tampa, is both the owner of the power plant and one of the corporate donors who funded the Republican National Convention. Earth First decided not to attack the GOP themselves, but instead to target the GOP's bosses directly.
That's right. We actually had three people who chained themselves to a PVC pipe, and we're hearing that at some point they actually had chicken wire wrapped around themselves or somewhere in the vicinity.
That sounds like they used Tootsie Rolls. Tootsie Rolls are a special kind of lockbox. You take a PVC pipe with a pin in the middle that you lock yourself to. You cover it in chicken wire, you put nails in the chicken wire, you dip it in tar, you roll it around in sand and cover it up with duct tape, and Tootsie Rolls are just plain hell to cut through. And I don't know if these folks were using full Tootsie Rolls or just added chicken wire, but it sounds like Earth First in Tampa, Florida is getting seriously creative.
Removal coal mining!
When it comes to mountaintop removal coal mining!
100 or so protesters who were out here were from the environmental group Earth First. They believe dirty energy becomes dirty politics and say this year's RNC was funded by millions of dollars in corporate payoffs from energy companies like Tico, Chevron, and ExxonMobil. The organizer of this group told me they targeted this power plant because it's one of the dirtiest in the country with high emissions.
A new glut of natural gas driven by the controversial extraction method known as hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, has shaken up U.S. energy policy and increased pressure to phase out older, dirty coal-burning power plants, which produce more toxic emissions than newer ones. Over the summer, a report by the U.S. Energy Information Administration found natural gas tied with coal for the first time as the leading fuels used by U.S. power plants. With stricter air quality standards for new power plants from the Environmental Protection Agency, coal now faces new economic hurdles. The report estimates about 17% of all coal-fired power plants could be retired by the year 2020. Optimists also note carbon emissions from the U.S. energy sector have fallen to the lowest level in 20 years. Today, a new natural gas plant produces 30 to 50% less carbon emissions than a conventional coal power plant. Energy analysts see natural gas as an improvement, but not a real solution to address the urgent issue of climate change. Natural gas produces methane, a major greenhouse gas. However, even with the increased use of natural gas in the United States, predictions of rising global temperatures of 3.5 degrees Celsius by the year 2050 remain unchanged due to the increased burning of coal in China and India. In the longer term, clean energy advocates worry that cheap natural gas could reduce investment in a new generation of wind and solar energy production technologies.
Fracking is a form of natural gas drilling, an alternative to oil, because the oil kept spilling, bringing jobs to small towns, so everybody's willing. People turn on the lights and the drillers make a killing.
Water goes into the pipe into the ground. The pressure cranks fissures 7,000 feet down. The cracks release the gas that powers your town. That will is frack, yeah, totally frack.
But there's more in the water than just H2O. Toxic chemicals help to make the fluid flow. With names like benzene and formaldehyde, you better keep them far away from the water supply.
The drillers say the fissures are a mile below the groundwater pumped into American homes, but don't tell it to the residents of Sublet Wayo, that water's frack. We're talking benzene.
What the frack is going on? With all this fracking going on, I think we need some facts to come to light. I know we want our energy, but nothing ever comes for free. I think my water's on fire tonight.
So it all goes back to 2005. Bush said gas drillers didn't have to comply with the Safe Drinking Water Act before too long. It was frack, baby, frack until the break of dawn.
With the EPA out, it was up to the states, but they didn't have the money to investigate. Sick people couldn't prove fracking was to blame, all the while water wells were going up in flames.
Cause it's hard to contain all the methane released. It can get into the air, it can get into the streams. It's a greenhouse gas worse than CO2. Fracking done wrong could lead to climate change too.
Now it's not that drillers should never be fracking, but the current regulation is severely lacking. Reduce the toxins contained, the gas and wastewater, and the people will get sick and the planet will get hotter.
What the frack is going on? With all this fracking going on, I think we need some facts to come to light. I know we want our energy, but nothing ever comes for free. I think our water's on fire tonight. We'll be right back.
residents of communities near mountaintop removal coal mining operations in southern Appalachia suffer higher levels of many kinds of health problems than those living further away from such sites. Mountaintop removal is a mining method where millions of tons of dynamite are used to blast the tops off mountains in order to extract the coal seams beneath, dislodging rocks and earth, which are dumped into the valleys below. Thus far, these operations have destroyed 500 mountain ridges and buried 2,000 miles of freshwater streams. While local residents can't prove their ailments are the result of mountaintop mining operations, many believe there is a direct connection. A score of scientific studies seems to back them up, and residents are now coming together to support legislation in Congress that would halt new permits for the mining practice until thorough health studies are conducted. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Dr. Michael Hendricks, professor of health policy management and leadership at West Virginia University, who was the lead author on recent mountaintop mining health studies. He explains what he and his co-authors' research revealed and what conclusion he's come to about whether mountaintop mining should be allowed to continue.
We've done this research over the last 6 years or so, and it documents that people who live in mining environments in Appalachia experience health problems at higher rates than people in non-mining environments. And these health problems cross many different diagnostic groups. So we see that people in mining environments are more likely to have some forms of cancer, types of cardiovascular disease, lung disease, birth defects, lower birth weight babies, poorer health-related quality of life. We found these effects are present for different outcomes for men, women, and children. So it's not just a problem among men who are coal miners. It's a larger problem for the community in general. We find that the health problems get more severe as the levels of mining increase. So the problems are worse where the mining levels are heaviest, and they're intermediate where mining is intermediate, and they're best where mining is absent. We find that the problems persist after controlling for the effects of other risk factors. So it's not because of smoking or poverty or age or education or obesity or other types of risks that also are related to these health problems. It's an independent effect. And more recently, we found that these problems are most pronounced and most concentrated specifically in areas of central Appalachia where mountaintop removal mining takes place. We don't yet have the direct evidence that links environmental conditions in a mining area to the specific health problems experienced by individuals. So we don't know yet that a particular disease outcome is related to environmental exposures. We know only that the people that live in these communities are at higher risk after controlling for other risks. So one of the things that we're doing right now to try to carry that forward is that we are starting to collect that direct environmental data in residential communities, in mountaintop mining environments where people live. We're taking water samples and air samples right in people's yards, right in their homes. And we are finding evidence that dust levels are significantly higher in the mining communities compared to the control communities. Estimates of the amount of dust that's deposited into the human lung are higher in the mining communities. We're seeing that the contents of the dust that are collected from the mining environments are primarily things like silica, aluminum, sulfur, organic carbon, things that you would expect in retrospect to find is related to mountaintop removal. So we're seeing evidence that what's in the air is, in fact, the coal itself and the overburden from the mountaintop removal mining, from the dust that's raised by the explosives, by the heavy machinery that removes hundreds of feet of soil and rock to get to the coal. That's what's in the air. So we know that the environmental conditions are impaired. We know that the health problems exist, but we haven't yet studied air and water quality for the same people in the same households that we're measuring the health outcomes for. That's the missing piece. That's harder to do. It's more expensive, time-consuming, but that's where we're trying to go next.
Is that the thing that could prove the connection to mountaintop removal mining?
That's the piece that could provide that evidence, yeah. The evidence that we have so far is, even though it's still indirect, it's so substantial that to try to argue that, oh, we just have to study it more, we don't really know, we don't have good evidence. Personally, I think we've cross that line. I think we have enough indirect evidence that we know that mountaintop removal is damaging to the environment. That is a fact. And we know that people who live in these environments have health problems in ways that are not explained by other risk factors. That is a fact. For us to argue that all we have to do is continue to study, I think, is an excuse to do nothing, and that we should take responsible steps now to eliminate those environmental consequences from mountaintop removal mining.
And Mike Hendricks, how would that happen? Do you have specific ideas in mind? Do you mean just stop it?
Mountaintop removal mining should be stopped. The evidence for it is overwhelming. The evidence for it, and just in terms of its environmental impacts, put human health impacts aside if you don't believe the evidence for that is convincing enough yet. The evidence is compelling that water pollution alone that's coming off of the mining sites is in violation of existing law.
That was Dr. Michael Hendricks, a professor of health policy management and leadership at West Virginia University. Learn more about the health effects of mountaintop removal coal mining by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.